and falls to his knees.
"That does it," Mac says.
He brushes sawdust off his jeans.
"I am through playing around."
Mac stomps off to his office. When he returns, he is carrying a long stick. The gleaming hook on its end is almost beautiful, like a sliver of moon. It's a claw stick. Mac pokes Ruby with the sharp point. Not hard, just a touch. I can tell he wants her to see how much it can hurt. I growl low in my throat. Ruby doesn't budge. She is a gray, unmoving boulder. She closes her eyes, and for a moment I wonder if she might have fallen asleep.
"I'm warning you," Mac says.
He breathes out. He stares at the ceiling. Ruby makes a huffing sound.
"Fine," Mac says. "You want to play it that way?"
He draws back the claw stick.
"No!"
Julia cries.
"I'm not going to hurt her,"
Mac says.
"I just want to get her attention."
Bob snarls. Mac swings. The hook slices the air just a few inches above Ruby's head.
"See why you don't want to mess with me?"
Mac says. He draws back the claw stick again.
"Now move!"
Ruby jerks her head, flinging her trunk toward Mac. She makes a noise that sends the sawdust scattering. It makes my glass shiver. It is the most beautiful mad I have ever heard. Ruby's trunk slaps into Mac. I don't see exactly where she strikes him. Somewhere below his stomach, I think. And I know he must be uncomfortable, because Mac drops the claw stick and falls down on the ground and curls into a ball and howls like a baby.
"Direct hit," Bob says.
Poor Mac. Mac groans. He stumbles to his feet and hobbles off toward his office. Ruby watches him leave. I can't read her expression. Is she afraid? Relieved? Proud? When Mac is gone, George and Julia lead Ruby from the ring.
"It's okay, baby, it's okay,"
Julia says, stroking Ruby's head. They settle Ruby in her domain and make sure she has fresh water and food. Before long, Ruby's dozing.
"Dad?"
Julia asks as George locks Ruby's iron door.
"Do you think Mac would ever hurt Ruby?"
"I don't think so, Jules," George says. "At least, I hope not."
"Maybe we could call someone."
George scratches his chin.
"I wish I could help Ruby, but I wouldn't know how. I mean, who would I call? The elephant cops? Besides..."
George looks down.
"I need this job, Jules. We need this job. Your mom, the doctor bills..."
He kisses the top of Julia's head.
"Back to work.
You and me both." Julia sighs and reaches for her backpack. She removes a piece of paper, a bottle of water, and a small metal box. "Homework first," George says, wagging a finger. "Then you can paint."
"It's for art class,"
Julia explains.
"We're doing watercolors. I'm going to paint Ruby."
George smiles.
"All right, then. Just don't forget your spelling." "Dad?"
Julia asks again.
"Did you see Mac's face when Ruby hit him?"
George nods.
"Yes,"
he says solemnly.
"I did."
He shakes his head.
"Poor Mac."
He turns away, and only then do I hear him laughing. Colors. Julia opens the metal box. I see a row of little squares. Green, blue, red, black, yellow, purple, orange. The colors seem to glow. She pulls out a brush with a thin tuft of a tail at its end. She dips the brush in water and wets the paper, then taps at the red square. When the brush meets the damp paper, pink petals of color unfurl like morning flowers. I can't take my eyes off that magical brush. For a moment, I'm not thinking about Ruby and Mac and the claw stick and Stella. Almost. Julia touches red again, then blue, and there suddenly is the purple of a ripe grape. She touches the blue, and her paper turns to summer sky. Black and white, and now I see that she is painting a picture of Ruby. I can make out her floppy ears, her thick legs. Julia stops painting. She takes a few steps back, hands on her hips, gazing at her work. She scowls.
It's not right, she says.
She glances over her shoulder at me. I try to look encouraging. Julia starts to crumple up the paper, then reconsiders. Instead, she slides it into my cage at the spot where my glass is broken.
Here you go, she says. A Julia original. That'll be worth millions someday.
Gingerly, I pick up the paper. I do not eat a single bite of it.
Oh, hey, I almost forgot.
Julia runs to her backpack. She pulls out three plastic jars, one yellow, one blue, one red. She opens the jars, and an odd, not-food smell hits my nose. Julia pushes the jars, one by one, through the opening. Then she slides some paper through.
These are called finger paints, she says. My aunt gave them to me, but really I'm too old for finger painting.
I stick a finger into the red jar. The paint is thick as mud. It's cool and smooth, like bananas underfoot. I pop my finger into my mouth. It's not exactly ripe mango, but it's not bad. Julia laughs.
You don't eat it, you paint with it.
She grabs a piece of paper and presses her finger on it.
See? Like this.
I place my finger on a piece of paper. I lift it, and a red mark is there. I get a bigger glob from the pot and slap my hand down on the page. When I pull my hand off the paper, its red twin stays behind. This isn't like the ghostly handprints on my glass, the ones my visitors leave behind. This handprint can't be so easily wiped away. A bad dream. I lie awake, peeling dried red paint off my fingertips. Bob, who accidentally walked on one of my paintings, is licking his red paws. Every so often, I glance over at the empty ring. The claw stick glints in the moonlight.
Stop! No!
Ruby's frantic cries startle me. Ruby, I call. You're having a bad dream. You're okay. You're safe.
Where's Stella?
She asks, gulping air. Before I can answer, she says,
Never mind. I remember now.
Go back to sleep, Ruby, I say. You've had a hard day.
I can't go back to sleep,
she says.
I'm afraid I'll have the same dream. There was a sharp stick, and it hurt.
I look at Bob, and he looks back at me.
Oh,
Ruby says.
Oh, Mac.
She puts her trunk between the bars.
Do you think...
She hesitates.
Do you think Mac is mad because I hurt him today?
I consider lying, but gorillas are terrible liars. Probably, I finally say.
He ran away after that,
Ruby says. Bob gives a scornful laugh.
Crawled away is more like it.
We are quiet for a while. Branches claw at the roof. A light rain drums. One of the parrots murmurs something in her sleep. Ruby breaks the silence.
Ivan, I smell something funny.
He can't help it,
Bob says. I believe she's referring to the finger paints Julia gave me, I say.
What are finger paints?
Ruby asks. You make pictures with them, I explain.
Could you make a picture of me?
Maybe someday. I remember Julia's picture, the one that will be worth $1 million. I hold it up to the glass. Look, it's you. Julia made it.
It's hard to see,
Ruby says.
There's not much moonlight. Why do I have two trunks?
I examine the picture. Those are feet.
Why do I have 2 feet?
That's called artistic license,
Bob says. Ruby sighs.
Could you tell me another story?
She asks.
I don't think I can ever go back to sleep.
I told you all I remember, I say with a helpless shrug.
Then tell me a new story,
she says.
Make something up.
I try to think, but my thoughts keep returning to Mac and his claw stick.
Anything yet?
Ruby asks. I'm working on it.
Ivan?
Ruby presses.
Bob said you were going to save me.
I search for true words. I'm working on that, too.
Ivan?
Ruby says in a voice so low I can barely hear her.
I have another question.
I can tell from the sound of her voice that this will be a question I don't want to answer. Ruby taps her trunk against the rusty iron bars of her door.
Do you think,
she asks,
that I'll die in this domain someday, like Aunt Stella?
Once again I consider lying, but when I look at Ruby, the half-formed words die in my throat. Not if I can help it, I say instead. I feel something tighten in my chest, something dark and hot. And it's not a domain, I add. I pause, and then I say it. It's a cage. The story. I look at the ring, layered with fresh sawdust. I look at the skylight, at the half-hidden moon. I just thought of a story, I say.
Is it a made-up story or a true one?
Ruby asks. True, I say. I hope. Ruby leans against the bars. Her eyes hold the pale moon in them, the way a still pond holds stars. Once upon a time, I say, there was a baby elephant. She was smart and brave, and she needed to go to a place called a zoo.
What's a zoo?
Ruby asks. A zoo, Ruby, is a place where humans make amends. A good zoo is a place where humans care for animals and keep them safe.
Did the baby elephant get to the zoo?
Ruby asks softly. I don't answer right away. Yes, I say at last.
How did she get there?
Ruby asks. She had a friend, I say. A friend who made a promise. How? It takes a long time, but finally Ruby returns to sleep.
Ivan?
Bob whispers, yawning.
What you said about the zoo? How are you going to do it?
Suddenly I feel as if I could sleep for 1,000 days. I don't know, I admit.
You'll think of something,
Bob says confidently, his voice trailing off as his eyes close. What if I don't? I ask. but Bob is already asleep. His little red feet dance, and I know he's running in his dreams. Remembering. Bob and Ruby sleep on. I don't sleep. I think about the promise I made to Stella, and the pictures I've made for Ruby. And I remember. I remember it all. What they did. We were clinging to our mother, my sister and I, when the humans killed her. They shot my father next. Then they chopped off their hands, their feet, their heads. Something else to buy. There is a cluttered, musty store near my cage. They sell an ashtray there. It is made from the hand of a gorilla. Another Ivan. When morning comes, and the parking lot glimmers with dew, I see the billboard on the highway. There I am, the one and only Ivan, bathed in the pink light of dawn. I look so angry, with my furrowed brow and clenched fists. I look the way my father did, the day the men came. I am, I suppose, a peaceful sort. Mostly I watch the world go by, and think about naps and bananas and yogurt raisins. But inside me, hidden, is another Ivan. He could tear a grown man's limbs off his body. In the flicker of time it takes a snake's tongue to taste the air. He could taste revenge. He is the Ivan on the billboard. I stare at the one and only Ivan, at the faded picture of Stella, and I remember George and Mac on their ladders, adding the picture of Ruby to bring new visitors to the Exit 8 Big Top Mall and Video Arcade. I remember the story Ruby told, the one where the villagers came to her rescue. I hear Stella's kind, wise voice.
Humans can surprise you sometimes.
I look at my fingers, coated in red paint, the color of blood. And I know how to keep my promise. Days. During the days, I wait. During the nights, I paint. I worry when Mac takes Ruby into the ring. He carries the claw stick with him all the time now. He doesn't use it. He doesn't have to. Ruby isn't fighting back anymore. She does whatever Mac asks. Nights. I close my eyes. I dip my fingers into the paint. When I'm done with one piece of paper, I set it aside to dry. It's so small, just one sheet, and I'm going to need so many. I move on to the next, and the next, and the next. It's a giant puzzle, and I'm making the pieces one by one. By morning, my floor is covered with paintings. I hide the paintings under my pool of dirty water before Mac can see them. I don't want them to end up in the gift store, selling for $20 apiece, 25 with frame. These paintings are for Ruby. Every one of them. Project.
Ivan?
Ruby asks one morning when I am trying to nap.
Why are you always so sleepy during the day?
I've been working on a project at night, I tell her.
What's a project?
It's a thing, a painting. It's a painting for you, actually, I answer. Ruby looks pleased.
Can I see it?
Not yet. Ruby pokes with annoyance at her roped foot. She takes a breath.
Ivan, do I have to do the shows with Mac today?
I'm afraid so. I'm sorry, Ruby. Ruby dips her trunk in her water bucket.
That's okay,
she says.
I already knew the answer.
Not right. It's night again, and everyone's asleep. I look at the picture I've just made, one of dozens. It's smudged and torn, a muddy blur. I place it beside the others lining my floor. The colors are wrong. The shapes are off. It looks like nothing. It's not what I'm trying to create. It's not what it's meant to be. It's not right, and I don't know why. Across the parking lot, the billboard beckons, as it always does. Come to the Exit 8 Big Top Mall and Video Arcade, home of the one and only Ivan, Mighty Silverback. If I could use human words to say what I need to say, this would all be so easy. Instead, I have my pots of paint and my ragged pages. I sigh. My fingertips glow like jungle flowers. I try again. Going Nowhere. I watch Ruby plod around the ring in endless circles, going nowhere. More visitors have been coming, but not many. Max says Ruby's not picking up the slack after all. He says he's cutting back on our food. He says he's turning off the heat at night to save money. Ruby looks thinner to me, more wrinkled than Stella ever was. Do you think Ruby's eating enough? I ask Bob.
I don't know. I'll tell you one thing, though. You're sure as heck painting enough.
Bob wrinkles his nose.
That stench is unbelievable. And I found yellow paint in my tail this morning.
Bob isn't happy about my night painting. He says it's unnatural. Now, while I work at my art, Bob sleeps on Not Tag. He claims he prefers her because she doesn't snore. He says her belly doesn't rise and fall and make him seasick.
What is this plan of yours anyway?
Bob asks.
If you explained it to me, I could help out.
He gnaws at his tail.
Maybe I could come up with something that doesn't involve, you know, paint.
I can't explain it, I tell him. It's an idea in my head, but I can't get it right. And anyway, I'm almost out of supplies. I should have known I wouldn't have enough. I kick at my tire swing. It's spattered with drops of blue paint. It's a stupid idea.
I doubt that,
Bob says.
Smelly, yes. Stupid? Never.
Bad guys. Most of the day I doze. Late in the afternoon, Mac approaches. Bob slips under Not Tag. He prefers to keep a low profile around Mac. Mac's gaze falls on my pool. A corner of one of my paintings is visible.
What's that, big guy?
He asks. I calmly eat an orange, ignoring him. But my heart is racing. Mac kicks at my plastic pool. Underneath it are all the paintings. Mac yanks on a piece of paper. It slips out easily, and he doesn't seem to notice the other paintings. The page is striped with green, which is what happens when blue paint and yellow paint get together. It's supposed to be a patch of grass.
Not bad. Where'd you get the paint, anyway? George's kid?
He considers.
I'll bet I can get 30 for this picture, maybe even 40.
Mac turns on my TV. It's a Western. There's a human with a big hat and a small gun. He has a shiny star pinned to his chest. That means he is the sheriff, and he will be getting rid of all the bad guys.
If this sells quick, I'm getting you some more of that paint, buddy,
Mac says. He walks away with my painting, Ruby's painting. For a moment, I imagine what it would feel like to be the sheriff. Ad.
Good news, huh?
Bob says when Mac's out of earshot.
Looks like you might be getting some more supplies.
I don't want to paint for Mac, I say. I'm painting for Ruby.
You can do both,
Bob says.
You're an artist, after all.
While I watch the movie, I try to come up with a new hiding place for my paintings. Maybe, I think, I could fold them, once they're dry, and stuff them into Not Tag. It's a long movie. At the end, the sheriff marries the woman who owns the saloon, which is a watering hole for humans, but not horses. It's been a long time since I've seen a Western that was also a romance. I liked that movie, I say to Bob.
Too many horses, not enough dogs,
he comments. An ad comes on. I don't understand ads. They're not like Westerns, where you know who the bad guy is supposed to be. And they're hardly ever romantic, unless the man and the woman are brushing their teeth before they face lick. I watch an ad for underarm deodorant. How do you know who's who if they don't smell? I ask Bob.
Humans reek, Bob replies. They just don't notice because they have incompetent noses.
Another ad comes on. I see children and their parents buying tickets, just like the tickets Max sells. They laugh, enjoying their ice cream cones as they walk down a path. They pause to watch two sleepy-eyed cats, huge and striped, dozing in long grass. Tigers. I know because I saw them on a nature show once. Words flash on the screen, accompanied by a drawing of a red giraffe. The giraffe vanishes, and I see a human family staring at another kind of family. Elephants, old and young. They're surrounded by rocks and trees and grass and room to wander. It's a wild cage. A zoo. I see where it begins and where it ends. The wall that says, you are this and we are that, and that is how it will always be. It's not a perfect place. Even in just a few fleeting seconds on my TV screen, I can see that. A perfect place would not need walls. But it's the place I need. I gaze at the elephants, and then I look over at Ruby, small and alone. Before the ad ends, I try to remember every last detail. Rocks, trees, tails, trunks. It's the picture I need to paint. Imagining. It's different now when I paint. I'm not painting what I see in front of me, a banana, an apple. I'm painting what I see in my head, things that don't exist, at least not yet. Not Tag. I pull out Not Tag's stuffing. Carefully, I fill her with my paintings, hiding them so Mac won't sell them. She's large, bigger than Bob, but I still have to crumple a few of them. Bob tries to settle on her for a nap.
You've killed her,
he complains. I had to, I say.
I miss your stomach,
Bob admits.
It's so spacious.
When Julia arrives, she notices that I've used up my paints and paper.
Wow.
Julia shakes her head.
You are one serious artist, Ivan.
One more thing. My finger painting has sold for $40 with frame. Mac is happy. He brings me a huge pile of paper and big buckets of paint.
Get to work,
he says. I paint for Mac during the day, and for Ruby at night. I nap when I can. But my nighttime picture isn't quite right. It's big, that's for sure. When I place all the pieces on the floor of my cage, side by side, the cement is almost completely covered. But something is still missing. Bob says I'm crazy.
There's Ruby,
he says, pointing with his nose.
There's the zoo. There are other elephants. What's wrong with it?
It needs one more thing, I say. Bob groans.
You're being a temperamental artist. What could be missing?
I stare at the huge expanse of colors and shapes. I don't know how to explain to Bob that it isn't done yet. I'll just have to wait, I say at last. Something will come to me, and then I'll know my painting is finally ready. The 7 o'clock show. During the last show of the day, Ruby seems tired. When she stumbles, Mac reaches for the claw stick. I tense, waiting for her to strike back. Ruby doesn't even flinch. She just keeps plodding along, and after a while, Snickers jumps onto her back. 12. I lie in my cage with Bob on my stomach. We are watching Julia do her homework. She doesn't seem to be enjoying it. I can tell because she is sighing more than usual. Again, for the 100th time, or maybe the 1,000th, I wonder what is missing from my painting. And for the 100th time, or maybe the 1,000th, I don't have any answer.
Dad,
Julia says as George passes by with a mop.
Can I ask you a question?
May I, George corrects. Ask away. Julia glances down at a piece of paper.
What's the difference between the word spelled P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-L and the one spelled P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E?
The first one is the head of a school, like Ms. Garcia. The second one is a belief that helps you know what's right or wrong.
He smiles.
For example, it's against my principles to do my daughter's homework for her.
Julia groans.
If I'm going to be an artist when I grow up, why do I need to know how to spell?
With a laugh, George heads off. Poor Julia, I think. Gorillas get by just fine without learning how to spell. All those endless letters, those sticks and circles and zigzags filling up books and magazines, billboards and candy wrappers. Words. Humans love their words. I leap up. Bob goes flying straight into my pool. A word.
You know how I feel about wet feet,
Bob yells. He scrambles out of the water, shaking each foot in dismay. I look out my window at the billboard. I can still hear Mac's voice in my head.
Come to the Exit 8 Big Top Mall and Video Arcade, home of the one and only Ivan, Mighty Silverback.
I count to 12, and then I count again. Just to be sure. H. I lay out 16 pieces of poster board, 4 down, 4 across. A perfect square.
What are you up to?
Bob demands.
I'm guessing it doesn't involve sleep.
It has to do with the billboard.
That sign's a monstrosity. Particularly since I'm not featured.
I grab my bucket of red paint. You're not on the billboard because you're not in the show, I point out.
Technically, I don't even live here,
Bob says with a sniff.
I am homeless by choice.
I know. I'm just saying. I study the billboard. Then I make two fat lines, like broom handles. Another fat line connects them. I stand back. What do you think?
What is it? No, wait, let me guess. A ladder?
Not a ladder, I say. A letter. At least, I think that's what they're called. I have to make three more. Bob cuddles up next to Not Tag. Why? He asks, yawning. Because then I'll have a word. A very important word. I dip my fingers into the paint.
What word?
Bob asks. Home. Bob closes his eyes.
That's not so important,
he says quietly. Nervous. All day long I knuckle-walk circles around my cage. I'm so nervous I can't nap. I can't even eat. Well, not very much, anyway. I'm ready to show Julia what I've made. It has to be Julia. She's an artist. Surely she'll look, truly look, at my painting. She won't notice the smudges and tears. She won't care if the pieces don't quite fit together. She'll see past all of that. Surely Julia will see what I've imagined. I watch Ruby trudge sullenly through the 4 o'clock show, and I wonder, what will happen if I fail? What if I can't make Julia understand? But of course, I know the answer. Nothing. Nothing will happen. Ruby will remain the main attraction at the Exit 8 Big Top Mall and Video Arcade, conveniently located off I-95 with shows at 2, 4, and 7, 365 days a year, year after year after year. Showing Julia. It's time to show my work. The mall is silent, except for Thelma, the macaw, who is practicing a new phrase.
Uh-oh!
Julia is finishing her homework. George is sweeping outside. Mac has gone home for the night. I grab Not Tag and carefully pull out the folded papers. So many paintings. Page after page, piece after piece of my giant puzzle. I pound on my glass, and Julia glances over. Fingers trembling, I hold up one of my paintings. It's brown and green, a corner piece. Julia smiles. I display another picture, and then another, and another, and another, each one a tiny part of the whole. Julia looks confused.
But what is it?
She asks. She shrugs.
It doesn't matter. It's pretty, just as it is.
Uh-oh,
says Thelma. No, I think. No. It does matter. More paintings. George calls out to Julia. He's done for the night. Grab your backpack, he says, and hurry, it's late.
Gotta go, Ivan,
Julia says. Julia doesn't understand. I have to find the right pieces. I dig through the pile. They're here somewhere, I know they are. I find one, another. I try to hold four of them up against the glass. Bob, I say, help me, hurry. Bob grabs paintings with his teeth and drags them to me. One by one, I shove pictures through the window crack. They crumple and tear. There are too many pieces. My puzzle is too big.
Careful, Ivan, Julia says. Those might be worth millions someday. You never know.
She arranges the paintings into a neat stack.
I suppose Mac's going to want to sell these in the gift shop.
She still doesn't understand. I shove more out the hole, and more, all of them, one after another. So Ivan's been painting, has he? George says as he puts on his coat.
A lot,
says Julia with a laugh. A whole lot. You're not taking all those home with you, are you? George asks. I mean, no offense to Ivan, but they're just blobs. Julia thumbs through the towering stack of paintings.
They might not be blobs to Ivan.
Let's leave those by the office, George suggests. Mac will want to try selling them, although why anyone would pay $40 for a finger painting a 2-year-old could do, I don't know.
I like Ivan's work,
Julia says.
He puts his feelings into them.
He puts his hair into them, George says. Julia waves goodbye.
Night, Ivan. Night, Bob.
I press my nose against the glass and watch her walk away. All my work, all my planning, wasted. I look at Ruby, sleeping soundly, and suddenly I know she'll never leave the Big Top Mall. She'll be here forever, just like Stella. I can't let Ruby be another one and only. Chest beating. Often when visitors come to see me, they beat their hands against their puny chests, pretending to be me. They pound away, soundless as the wet wings of a new butterfly. The chest beating of a mad gorilla is not something you ever want to hear, not even if you're wearing earplugs, not even if you're 3 miles away wearing earplugs. A real chest beating sends the whole jungle running, as if the sky has broken open, as if men with guns are near. Angry. Thump! The sound, my sound, echoes through the mall. George and Julia spin around. Julia drops her backpack. George drops his keys. The pile of pictures goes flying. Thump, thump, thump. I bounce off the walls. I screech and bellow. I beat and beat and beat my chest. Bob hides under knot tag, his paws over his ears. I'm angry at last. I have someone to protect. Puzzle pieces. After a long while, I grow quiet. I sit. It's hard work being angry. Julia looks at me with wide, disbelieving eyes. I'm panting. I'm a little out of shape.
What the heck was that?
George demands.
Something's really wrong,
Julia says.
I've never seen Ivan act this way.
He seems to be calming down, thank goodness, George says. Julia shakes her head.
He's still upset, Dad. Look at his eyes.
My pictures are scattered all over the floor like huge autumn leaves.
What a mess,
George says, sighing. Wish I hadn't bothered sweeping tonight.
Do you think Ivan's okay?
Julia asks. Probably just a temper tantrum, George says. He reaches under a chair to retrieve a brown and red picture. Can't say I blame the guy stuck in that tiny cage all these years. Julia starts to answer, but then she freezes. She cocks her head. She stares at her feet where my pictures lie in disarray.
Dad,
she whispers.
Come see this.
I'm sure he's another Rembrandt, George says. Let's pick these up and get going, Jules. I'm exhausted.
Dad,
she says again.
Seriously, look at this.
George follows her gaze. I see blobs, many, many blobs, along with the occasional swirl. Please, can we go home now?
That's an H, Dad.
Julia kneels down, straightening one picture, then another.
That's an H, and here,
She grabs more pictures.
Put this one here, and I don't know, maybe that one? You have an E.
George rubs his eyes. I hold my breath. Julia is running now. She picks up one picture, sets down another.
It's like a puzzle, Dad. This is something. It's a word, maybe words, and a picture of something, a giant picture.
Jules, George says.
This is crazy.
But he's looking at the floor, too, wandering from picture to picture and scratching his head.
H,
Julia says.
E,
O. Ho? Julia chews her lower lip.
H-E-O, and that looks a lot like an I.
H-E-O-I. George writes in the air with his finger.
I-E-O-H. Not the letter, an actual I. And that's a foot, or maybe a tree, and a trunk. Dad, I think that's a trunk.
Julia runs to my window.
Ivan,
she whispers.
What did you make?
I stare back. I cross my arms. This is taking much longer than I thought it would. Humans. Sometimes they make chimps look smart. Finally. Julia and George take the pictures to the ring, where there's room to see them all. An hour passes as they try to assemble my puzzle. Ruby's awake now, and she and Bob and I watch.
Ivan?
Ruby says.
Is that a picture of me?
Yes, I say proudly.
Where am I supposed to be?
That's a zoo, Ruby. See the walls and the grass and the people looking at you? Ruby squints.
Who are all those other elephants?
You haven't met them, I say. Yet.
It's a very nice zoo,
Ruby says with an approving nod. Bob nudges me with his cold nose.
It is indeed.
In the ring, Julia pumps her fist in the air.
Yes!
She cries.
I told you, Dad, there it is. H-O-M-E. Home.
George gazes at the letters. He spins around to look at me.
Maybe it's just a coincidence, Jules. You know, a once-in-a-trillion kind of thing. Like that old saying about the chimp and the typewriter. Give him long enough and he'll write a novel.
I make a grumbling noise, as if a chimp could write a letter, let alone a book.
Then how do you explain the rest of it?
Julia demands.
The picture of Ruby in the zoo.
How do you know it's a zoo? George asks.
See the circle on the gate? There's a red giraffe in it.
George squints and tilts his head.
Are you sure that's a giraffe? I was thinking more along the lines of a deformed cat.
It's the logo for the zoo, Dad. It's on all their signs. Explain that.
George gives her a helpless smile.
I can't. I can't begin to. I'm just saying there has to be a logical explanation.
Look how big this is.
Julia puts the last piece of Ruby's right ear into place.
It's huge.
It is definitely large, George agrees.
Julia watches me. She chews on her thumbnail. I see the question in her eyes. She turns back to the paintings and stares at them, looking, truly looking. A slow smile dawns on Julia's face.
Dad,
she says,
I have an idea, a big idea.
Julia races around the edge of my painting, her arms spread wide.
Billboard big.
I'm not following you.
I think this is meant to be on a billboard. That's what Ivan wants.
George crosses his arms over his chest.
What Ivan wants, he repeats slowly.
And you know this because you two have been chatting?
Because I'm an artist and he's an artist.
Uh-huh, says George. Julia clasps her hands together.
Come on, Dad, I'm begging you.
George shakes his head. No, I'm not doing that. No billboard, no way.
I'll get the ladder,
Julia says.
You get the glue. I know it's dark out, but the billboard's lit.
Mac'll fire me, Jules. Julia considers.
But think of the publicity, Dad. Everybody would know about Ruby.
You want me to put up a sign that shows Ruby in a zoo with the word home on it in giant letters? George gestures towards my pictures. A sign, incidentally, that just happens to have been made by a gorilla?
Exactly.
And you want me to do it without Mac's permission? George asks.
Exactly.
No, George says. No way. Julia goes to the edge of the ring, careful not to step on any of my paintings. She picks up Mac's claw stick. She walks back and hands it to her father. George runs a finger along the blade.
She's just a baby, Dad. Don't you want to help her?
But how would it help, Jules, even if lots of people see Ivan's sign? It doesn't mean anything's going to change.
I'm not exactly sure yet.
Julia shakes her head.
Maybe people will see the sign, and they'll know this isn't where Ruby belongs. Maybe they'll want to help, too.
George sighs. He looks at Ruby. She waves her trunk.
It's a matter of principle, Dad. P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-L.
L-E, George corrects.
Dad,
Julia says softly.
What if Ruby ends up like Stella?
George looks at me, at Ruby, at Julia. He drops the claw stick. The ladder, he says quietly, is in the storage locker. The next morning, I watch Mac's car slam to a halt in the parking lot. He leaps out. He stares at the billboard. His jaw is open. He doesn't move for a long time. Mad Human. A mad gorilla is loud, but a mad human can be loud too. Especially when he is throwing chairs and turning over tables and breaking the cotton candy machine. Phone call. Mac is kicking a trash can across the food court when the phone rings. He answers it, red-faced and sweating.
What the?
He demands. He glares at me.
I don't know what you're...
He starts to say, but then he stops to listen.
Who? Julia who?
He asks.
Oh, sure, George's kid. She's the one who called you?
More talking. With the phone to his ear, Mac comes closer to my cage, eyeing me suspiciously.
Yeah,
he says.
He paints, sure. We've been selling his art for quite a while now.
There is another long pause.
Yeah, absolutely. It was my idea.
Mac nods. A smile starts at the corners of his mouth.
Photos? No problem. You want to see him in action? Come on down, have a look. We're open 365 days a year. Can't miss us. We're right off I-95.
Mac picks up the overturned trash can.
Yeah, I think he'll be adding more pictures. It's a, you know, what do you call it? A work in progress.
When the call is done, Mac shakes his head.
Impossible,
he says. An hour later, a man with a camera comes to take my picture. He is from the local paper, the one Julia called.
How about you take one of me with the elephant?
Mac suggests. He drapes his arm around Ruby's back grinning as the camera clicks.
Perfect,
the man says. Perfect, Mac agrees. A star again. A photo of my billboard is in the newspaper. Mac tapes the story onto my window. Each day more curious people arrive. They park in front of the billboard. They point and shake their heads. They take photos. Then they come into the mall and buy my paintings. While visitors watch, I dip my hands in fresh buckets of paint. I make pictures for the gift shop and pictures to add to the billboard. Trees with birds. A newborn elephant with glittering black eyes. A squirrel. A bluebird. A worm. I even paint Bob so he can be on the billboard, too. I can tell he likes the picture, although he says I didn't quite capture his distinguished nose. Every afternoon, Mac and George add my new pictures to the billboard. People slow their cars while they work. Drivers honk and wave. My gift shop pictures now cost $65 with frame. The Ape Artist. I have new names. People call me the Ape Artist, the Primate Picasso. I have visitors from morning till night, and so does Ruby. But nothing's changed for her. Every day at 2, 4, and 7, Ruby plods through the sawdust with Snickers on her back. Every night, she has bad dreams. Bob, I say, after I've soothed Ruby to sleep with a story. My idea isn't working. Bob opens one eye.
Be patient.
I'm tired of being patient, I say. Interview. This evening, a man and woman come to interview Mac, and also George and Julia. The man has a large and heavy camera perched on his shoulder. He films me as I make my pictures. He films Ruby in her cage, with her foot roped to the bolt in the floor.
Mind if I look around?
He asks. Mac waves a hand.
Be my guest.
While Mac and the woman talk, the cameraman walks through the mall. He pans his camera right and left, up and down. When his eyes fall on the claw stick, he stops. He trains his camera on the gleaming blade. Then he moves on. The Early News. Mac turns on the TV. We are on the early news at 5 o'clock. Bob says, don't let it go to my head. There we all are. Mac, Ruby, me. George and Julia. The billboard, the mall, the ring. And the claw stick. Signs on sticks. In the morning, several people gather in the parking lot. They're carrying signs on sticks. The signs have words and pictures on them. One has a drawing of a gorilla cradling a baby elephant. I wish I could read. Protesters. More people with signs come today. They want Ruby to be free. Some of them even want Mac to shut down the mall. In the evening, George and Mac talk about them. Mac says they're protesting the wrong guy. He says they're going to ruin everything. He says, thanks for nothing, George. Mac stomps off. George, holding his mop, watches him leave. He rubs his eyes. He looks worried.
Dad?
Julia says, looking up from her homework.
You know what my favorite sign was?
Hmm? George asks. Which one?
The one that said, elephants are people too.
George gives her a tired smile. He goes back to work. His mop moves across the empty food court like a giant brush.